Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio today Cheyenne Heindel, who has just been awarded the Matanuska Susitna Borough Employee of the Quarter for the period coming up, the first quarter of 2018. And she's the finance director at the DSJ building in Palmer. Welcome, Cheyenne.
Thank you.
You have had a relatively long career at the borough, is that correct?
Yes, I have. I've been going on 24 years.
And you remember way back when you started?
Yeah, I remember dirt. Yes, I do. I came to the borough from public accounting, so I remember a lot about when I started.
And you have been involved with accounting in the borough for all that time.
Yeah.
Let's go back a step before that and ask, what drew you to accounting as a profession and career?
When I was young and didn't know what I wanted to do, I was looking for something that gave me a lot of opportunities. And accounting gives a stepping stone into a lot of different possibilities. At that time, I was thinking human resources. Didn't make it there.
Okay. On the other hand, accounting sort of undergirds everything that humans do.
Exactly.
So let's fast forward. Looking back now over this career, long career in accounting, what would you say, before we get into the details of what is actually happening in the borough, what has been the most rewarding part of the time you have spent in this field?
Mostly the interactions with the people, whether it's been my clients when I was doing public accounting and traveling to different villages
right. In
the state of Alaska, or just dealing with the public, the boards, the assembly, and the various different administrations we've had. I like dealing with people, and I think I deal well with them.
And that's a very interesting observation you make. I think there's a stereotype. I'm safely saying that there's a stereotype that if you're an accountant, you're interested in numbers and books and ledgers, and there's an image of someone sitting there on a high stool looking at a book and making sure it's all very neatly in order, et cetera. And there's that, and it's all about the numbers, and yet you're suggesting maybe it's more about the people.
Yeah, I am, actually. While I enjoy numbers, and it amazes people that I can remember a number from 10 years ago or a project the borough was working on when I first started,
right.
I've told a lot of young people that are taking accounting for accounting degrees, kids that I've mentored, that if you're going into accounting because you don't want to deal with people, it's not the place to go, because there is a lot of education that is done when you're an accountant or an auditor. There's a lot of interaction with people.
Okay, well, let's extend that a little bit, because what has contributed to you receiving the award we mentioned when we began the interview was a process called the budget process, which many organizations go through. And it is my observation, having both participated in the process and observed the process, that a lot of decisions are made with reference to numbers, but there are personal feelings about priorities, for example, in budgets that drive what actually happens. When the discussions go on, if it were just the numbers, you would just put the numbers into a computer, let it spit out an answer, and go down the road. But that's not what it's about.
No, it's actually with the borough's budget process. Not only is it about the numbers, and as always, we want to be fiscally responsible and keep the borough in a good position financially. But there's a lot of heartfelt projects, things that are going on in the borough, like road boards. They take their jobs very seriously, and they like to be educated, and they like to have their share of input into the budget that impacts them. And I think most citizens are that way. There's a lot of emotion, like you said, when they're we're guessing programs, funding for schools, funding for EMS. And sometimes as an auditor, sometimes you had to bridge that gap between the emotions and the numbers. Like I said, it's an education process. Both sides have to understand how the process works, whether you're the assembly making the final decision or you're somebody testifying. It helps if you all have a good idea about how those numbers come about and how they're actually utilized.
So what you're suggesting here and as you're talking is that the numbers aren't sitting there alone, but they connect very much to an impact upon people. And when we talk about cutting the budget or reducing or adding money here or there, the real statement we're making is that something is going to happen to someone.
Exactly.
It's not an exercise in moving a few numbers on a piece of paper, but that it's all about that result. Is that road going to be improved, plowed, etc.? Is that service going to be available for a citizen living here who wants to be able to have an accurate tax assessment, for example, or whatever?
That's exactly what it is. When I was doing audits, I can remember sitting in rooms explaining one client that just because they had a grant award didn't mean they had money in the bank, or explaining financial statement that they got an unqualified opinion on and what impact that was to their organization. Mm-hmm. The same way with road boards or fire boards, explaining how their budgets work and whether they can afford to do projects that they want to, or their mill rate's applicable and is getting them the kind of services they think they truly need. It's, like I said, it's a lot of working with people.
So I've observed the Assembly, among other organizations, over the years, and I can remember that, and I think I remember you coming forth, being called upon to say, we're talking about this. Would you come and explain how some money is available and perhaps all of the detail that says there's a restricted account or there's how much is there? Because unlike a personal budget at home, when presumably you have a checkbook and you can look and say, okay, if I've kept track of this, I know how much money I have this month. The borough is a much more complicated affair.
Yes, it is, especially with all the different service areas we have. So it's not only making sure the money's there, but the money's coming from the right funding source. There are legal restraints that we have that, as I like to say to some of my boards, I'm not willing to go to jail for. Uh-huh. So it's a matter, like I said, it's really a matter of education and assisting the Assembly in their decisions so they know that they've got the right information at the right time.
So you raise another interesting question. And a new Assembly person arrives. How do you help them understand the accounting of the borough?
Mostly we fully offer to let the new Assembly persons come in, or the old ones,
Oh, sure.
And discuss how the budget's put together, how the departments have come up with their numbers, how the accounting works. You know, if we get a grant, how does it work? How is the budget set? There's training that they can get, and they get through the clerk's office, but there's also information we can provide. And believe me, we talk to the Assembly and the finance department quite regularly.
So I'm also aware that we're talking about a process that is visible when the Assembly is discussing the budget and there's a meeting and we have that happening. But what you're also pointing out, I think, is that beneath the surface of that, your day job involves all of the processes that connect the departments and the administration and what's happening, the ongoing work of money moving from place to place. So how broad is your responsibility?
Besides working with all of the departments, we oversee the typical accounting functions besides the budget, payroll, grant administration, paying the bills, taking in the money, billing, taxes. Okay. Basically, that's all of finance in a nutshell.
Okay. So your official position is, describe it.
I'm the finance director. So I'm overall of the individual functions of an accounting process.
Okay.
Plus the assessments department.
Oh, the assessment department as well.
Yes.
Okay. So how many people?
Right around 50 total people.
Okay.
Maybe a little more.
And as you've described it, in my understanding of it, it seems so simple. Like, I just meet payroll, but How has technology over the years that you've been involved helped or hindered this process?
Well, when I first started doing accounting in the state of Alaska, I had clients doing it on handwritten ledgers.
Right.
Now, pretty much all accounting is involving some kind of software, whether we're doing assessments of property and land or we're doing payroll. It's all very tied to a computer program out there. So it's made us more efficient as long as we're sure our processes are good.
So one of the terms that's increasingly used and sought is transparency. Mm-hmm. Would you say, given your experience, that the process, the ability to look and see what's happening, whether you as a manager or presenting this information to the assembly, has become easier as a result of all of that? Or
I'm not sure it's become easier. I think we have more information that we can get quicker, pulling out certain things out of a handwritten ledger and a paper filing system is very different than running a report on a computer.
Okay.
When I first started, you know, back then, the CPA exam, you couldn't even use a calculator to do simple math functions to take the exam. You know, it was an adding machine and very little was done, actual audit work or accounting work on a computer. Nowadays, pretty much all of your work is done on a computer.
Okay. I've got that. That changes the process quite a bit, but I think I'm following pretty well what you're saying here. It seems to me that technology has allowed for an increased amount of information to be looked at. You still have to make some sense of it in order to give a summary report or talk to that issue.
Exactly. Yeah. The principles of accounting are still the same. It's just how we're pulling the information out of the system is more efficient, I would say.
Okay. So you're in the midst or somewhere in the process of next year's budget.
Yes, we are.
So because when we get to the 1st of July, there should be a new budget that will be operational.
There has to be a new budget.
Does that mean that as you look at the year, there are sometimes that are busier than others? And is this one of those beginning busy time?
Yes, all of accounting functions has busy periods and slack periods. If you're the payroll person, you're busy every 2 weeks putting together a payroll. If you're doing bank reconciliations or the audits, you're busy after year end. For me, budget time starts usually in December, and we wrap up the budget hopefully by the last week of May. And then we turn around and we're into tax billing time and tax payment time.
Right.
So there's ebbs and flows. It seems like more times now we are busier than we used to be. Mm-hmm. But I think that's just because of the growth in the borough. There's just more people, more bills to process, more payroll to process, more properties to value. So there's slack periods for some, but could be ramping up in busy periods for others in the finance department.
Okay. As you've describing what your departments do, I'm wondering to what degree are you and the people who work with you, people who will put up their hand and say, warning, warning, is that part of the function to note that perhaps although there's been a budget made and there were specific ways in which we expect the cash flow and everything to happen, that sometimes, and we know that a budget is a plan, it's not written in concrete, and if you would expect changes because different things happen, to what degree do you find yourself warning people that there's either a something that you're noticing that's not fitting, like tax income or something of that sort?
Well, we do recommend that all the departments regularly and routinely review their budget line items, because as you know, they can't overspend their budgets.
Sure.
No matter what happens, they can't overspend the adopted budget. Now, last year when we dealt with the governor's veto of our debt reimbursement, we made immediate plans. I mean, he did that June 30, July 1st. We were already reducing overtime, reducing travel, reducing capital projects, which the borough desperately needs to facilitate that reduction without having to reopen the budget or do other things to, or cut other things.
Sure.
To cover that $5.7 million. Throughout the year, we were able to look at it and we were able to do some things that actually, I wouldn't say lessened the blow, but made the blow a little easier to handle.
Okay.
We're still in those kinds of situations. We're still looking at our revenues very conservatively. We're not going to hopefully over budget what we anticipate our revenues to be, but we are also looking at our expenditures, trying to make sure that we're reasonably growing, but not excessively budgeting, if that makes sense.
Sure. I understand that. Unlike the federal government, local government, it's my understanding, has to have a balanced budget.
Yes, we do.
But that's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you finish up, you have to demonstrate if you're going to have expenses, you have income to match that.
We have to have income to match that or fund balance, which is our reserves,
right,
to cover anything extra. But truly in the borough's budget, if I budget $5, I can't spend more than $5
sure.
in expenditures. The borough budget's based on expenditures. So if we look at the revenue side of it and the expenditure side isn't matching up, we're going to be cutting expenditures before that budget's even presented to the assembly for the first time.
Okay. How close, and over the years, does the budget come out where, oh, we said we're going to spend this and we actually spent that?
In some individual departments, yes, that's the case. Some of the service areas, yes, that's the case. Mostly what we find is we spend less than what we anticipated.
Okay.
You know, you have turnover, you don't fill positions that quickly. You have extra money, you don't do a project that you thought was going to happen. That money's left to lapse into the fund balance for the next year.
Okay.
And once it lapses, it lapses. So you start with a new budget come July 1st.
Okay, so then that would be a kind of a starting amount that would be available and
overall.
Overall, right.
Not just to, if EMS lapses $500,000, that $500,000 is not set for EMS. That's just available in fund balance if it's needed to balance the next year's budget.
Okay. So we've been talking here with the person in charge, Cheyenne Heindel, and she's in charge of finances at the Matsu Borough. I'm curious about another observation you probably have given your experience. Many people have talked about the changing relationship, in particular, the lessening of funds that are available from the state. Have you noticed that?
And it's not just the state, it's the federal government also. We used to get federal payment in lieu of taxes for the federal land that's within the borough boundaries.
Right.
We get a pittance compared to what we got even 5 years ago. 5 years ago, we may have gotten $5 million. Now we're getting right around $1 million for that land. The same way with state shared revenue. Long ago, we would have gotten $10 million. Now we're looking at maybe $2 to $3 million.
Okay.
And we're anticipating both of those programs going away. The other thing is debt reimbursement. A lot of our schools for the last forever, the state has stepped in and helped reimburse part of the debt service, usually a 70% or a 60% reimbursement for that bond that we issued. That's been on a moratorium right now, and no debt is being issued with reimbursement. So, you know, that may continue to sit out there. So not just our borough, but everybody's going to have to figure out how they're going to fund school buildings in the future, and if the taxpayers are going to carry that cost or if the state's going to continue to help.
What would you say to a listener who is perhaps thinking of either a career change or starting a career to accounting? Does it look as you had seen it years ago? What would you say to them?
Well, I moved to the state of Alaska in 1986 during the height of the bust.
Oh, yes.
In fact, before I moved up here, I had a job. Before I moved up here, I called to make sure I still had a job. And I was told no problem because at that time there were some pronouncement set down by the federal government that was pretty much guaranteed accountants' jobs. And okay. I think that's the case forever. There's always going to be jobs for accountants. There are federal requirements. There are state requirements that we have to meet with our grants that have to be audited. There's obviously with the changes in the IRS rules, there's potential there going forward. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities and careers, and it just depends on what you're interested in. You can be an accountant and be in IT. I mean, I've sure. had a number of friends do that, assisting in financial packages. Like I said, I was interested originally in human resources. There's a lot of opportunities for accountants.
Okay. Well, that's I'd say a pretty glowing endorsement, actually.
You just have to remember you have to be able to talk to people.
I like that. Did we miss anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with Cheyenne Heindel, who is the director of all the finances at the Metsu Borough. And I really appreciate your coming in and for me, enlightening, because I thought I had a handle on some aspects of this, and I've learned something, and I hope the listeners do too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.